Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Eid Mubarak to our Muslim listeners. Takabalaw mina babinkum. It's a called Eid al-Fitr, which is marks the end of Ramadan. So a new week, a new month for many of us, and hopefully some better news than we've had over the last month or two.
Absolutely, absolutely right. Lots of stories we want to cover today. Let's start off with the Prime Minister Netanyahu's corruption trial, because that opened yesterday in Jerusalem. And apparently it was a bit of a carnival-like atmosphere. Tell us about it.
Well, it was a bit of a circus, Howard, and unfortunately we're going to be talking about this quite a lot. It's one of those things that we probably don't want to talk about, but unfortunately it is going to dominate news headlines, so I'm apologizing in advance for those people who might be less interested in this particular aspect of Israeli politics than other things, but we are going to have to cover it. It is a big story. It is a very substantial, significant story. The first time in Israel's history that a sitting prime minister has been indicted to stand trial on criminal charges. That's a big deal for us. Embarrassing. I don't know. Shameful. I don't know how we want to put it. Not a positive thing that we would like to have happening, not at this time and not at any time. You know, there are a few very, very important aspects to this trial that we need to cover. I mean, yesterday was the opening day of the trial. The Prime Minister had attempted to avoid being present, but the judiciary decided, the judges decided, that Israel's law says that a defendant needs to be in court to hear the charges that are put against him, and that the Prime Minister would not be excused from that. So they forced him effectively, even though he preferred not to attend yesterday, and he did apply to the court to be exempt from attending the hearing yesterday on the basis that it was just very technical anyway, and on the basis particularly that it was going to cost the state of Israel a lot of money to have him attending the court, because of course special security arrangements need to be put in place. He has a team of 5 security guards who cover him wherever he goes, and of course with the current social distancing rules and all the rest of it, a special bigger courtroom had to be found in order to accommodate all of the security. And it was definitely a bit of a circus that went on yesterday, which I think the Prime Minister had hoped to avoid. But the judges decided that as a citizen of this country, and the laws require that citizens are present in person to hear the charges that are put against him, and that's what they insisted that he does, and he was there yesterday. In the end, it started in the afternoon, and he's facing charges of fraud, breach of trust, and corruption in relation to 2 particular issues, at least. This trial is focused on 2 particular issues, and they both involve media groups. The one is the media group Walla, which is owned by the Alevich family. Shaul Alevich and his wife Iris are both co-defendants in this particular case. And the charge that's leveled against the Prime Minister is that he accepted gifts of significant value, and he accepted them in the hope that he would receive positive coverage. He established this relationship with Alevich to try somehow to get positive coverage within his Walla media empire. And in return for that, the Prime Minister, in his role as Prime Minister and also in his role as Minister of Communications previously, was supposedly going to do some favors to help Bezeq, the Israeli telecom company, also owned by the Alevich family. He was going to help them from a regulatory perspective. So that's where the quid pro quo was supposed to come in, and apparently he was accepting very, very significant gifts as part of this deal. So that's one charge in this case. The second charge relates to the Yediot Ahronot group, which is owned by the Moses family, and Noni Moses is also, once again, a co-defendant in this trial, because it is alleged that he tried to bribe the Prime Minister in order to make the regulatory environment such that the Yediot Ahronot media group would be advantaged against some of the other competitors in the market, particularly against Yisrael Hayom, which is a free newspaper and which is apparently getting very, very significant circulation, which Yediot Ahronot was concerned about. So the deal was that he would cover the Prime Minister positively in his media group, in return for which the Prime Minister would somehow do him favors to help the cause of Yediot Ahronot in their circulation, media war against others. And of course, once again, significant value of gifts involved, including the Prime Minister's wife, Sarah. So these are the charges that have been leveled against the Prime Minister. Lots and lots of demonstrations around the area of the courtroom and outside the Prime Minister's residence, both for and against. Many ministers in the new government turned up at the court yesterday in support of the Prime Minister and in support of his cause. The one thing that really concerns me more than anything else about this case is the attack that's being leveled against Israel's judiciary. The Prime Minister has stood up on more than one occasion and accused the police and accused the prosecution and accused the judiciary of conspiracy to unseat the Prime Minister, where he couldn't be unseated by a general election. The judiciary, the prosecution, and the police are apparently conspiring now to try somehow to unseat him and the right-wing government. This is at least the accusation that has been leveled.
It's
worrying for me. It's worrying for me because I think that our judiciary is one of the key pillars of our society and of our democracy. And to have someone in a senior position as the Prime Minister, who, by the way, was responsible for appointing a lot of people to their positions over the years that he's been Prime Minister. Many of these people who he's now accusing or conspiring against him were actually appointed by him or his governments over the years to their current positions. He's now saying that they're conspiring to try to unseat him. I think that this is a very unwarranted, undesirable, and really concerning attack against what is what I consider to be one of the key pillars of our democracy.
I think that is a point well made. It's a very, very dangerous approach to undermine the judiciary of any country, especially one that is independent. All right, let's talk about Iran for a second. The Iranian Supreme Leader now calling Israel a cancerous tumor that will be destroyed. So they back to their rhetoric, aren't they? In full swing.
Well, in full swing indeed, and even more than that, to be honest, because, you know, we spoke last week a little bit about this picture that was put up on the social media, which really depicted Jerusalem under the control of Iranian and Palestinian forces. And ironically, had just in the background somewhere, if you really look carefully enough, even some ultra-Orthodox Jews amongst the crowds trying to depict Jerusalem as having been conquered away from Israel. And of course, the Supreme Leader went on TV on Friday. Friday, the last Friday of Ramadan, has been designated by the Iranian regime to be Al-Quds Day. Al-Quds being the Arabic term for Jerusalem, Al-Quds. And of course, this is really all about protesting against Israel's control over Jerusalem and Israel's existence at all. And the Supreme Leader went on TV giving a 30-minute speech. This was Ali Khamenei, a 30-minute speech really bashing Israel, trying to justify why Israel has no right to exist at all, why Israel is a cancer or a tumor, and how Israel will ultimately be destroyed. It's detrimental to the region. It will undoubtedly be uprooted and destroyed, to quote a term that came from his speech. So it's just ongoing, constant all the time. And once again, we just see leaders of countries, not only Iran. I mean, Iran is probably the worst culprit of this, but leaders of countries being allowed freely to call for the destruction of a legitimate state amongst the international community. It's really not okay. And any country that supports Iran in whatever they do, be it Venezuela buying oil or whatever, any country that supports Iran in any way really needs to question itself, because I mean, that this is really unacceptable. Of course, Israel did respond saying that, you know, we discussed the whole reference to the final solution last week. And of course, the Israeli government responded on Twitter saying that, "We have experience with leaders who talk about final solutions, and we promise not on our watch." So that's just a response to all of this rhetoric. But, you know, it's not going to go away. And unfortunately, there are still countries in the international community who find it okay to do business and to continue to support Iran.
Yeah, absolutely. Quite a few comments about the judiciary, our judiciary discussion. Clive says Israeli justice system is a disgrace. Go and look at what Alan Dershowitz says. So Alan Dershowitz disagrees with the charges, and I have read what he has to say. And he, of course, has a very valid opinion, and that's also cool. But it's got to go. It's got to be played out through the system, and let's see what happens there. No one has convicted Netanyahu. He is just now going to appear before the court, which is, in fact, I think, what should happen. Clifford says that attacking the judiciary is always dangerous, but what if it's true? It did happen to Trump. I'm not sure that it did. I'm trying to think of the where Trump was attacked by the judiciary. All right, if you want to give me more details there, certainly I'm no fan of how the media or the House has necessarily dealt with Trump, but I'm not clear where the judiciary has turned against him. Anthony, moving on.
In terms of Alan Dershowitz's comment, I mean, Dershowitz certainly has points to make, and you know, he is a respected jurist, and we can't knock all of what he says. I think the point is that there are some people who feel that once somebody has been democratically elected as the leader of the country in the way that Prime Minister Netanyahu has been, that the judiciary has no right to attack them and to bring them to justice while they are serving in their position, because obviously it's a distraction and it's counter to the will of the people in the way that, you know, the democracy works. But I think that we need a judiciary to hold our politicians in check, and we can have a discussion about whether it's the right thing to indict a sitting prime minister, and or whether we should wait until he's completed his term and then hold him to account. But I think that the judiciary has a role to play in keeping our politicians in check, because unfortunately the politicians of today, and I'm making this comment generally around the world, not only about Israeli politicians, that politicians of today are not the ones that used to be in the old days, where their main objective was to try to promote the interests of the people who live in their country and to try to promote the interests of their country. But many of these politicians really have an agenda to pursue to try and promote themselves, and somehow we need to have checks and balances in place.
Yeah, interesting indeed, and I agree with that. All right, moving on to some other discussions. A limited limit on the number of passengers being carried on Israeli public transport systems have now been increased. Trains will return to operate as of June the 8th. Give us a sense of what's happening here.
So up until now, buses have been allowed to carry very, very limited people, actually 75% of their full capacity, in order to force people to be socially distant while operating the public transport. And of course, that's created a lot of stress on public transport as people return to work and return to school, because we don't have enough places on the public transport, and that causes crowding at bus stations and bus stops and things like that, which is also undesirable. The trains have not been operating for probably the best part of 3 months. Months now, so that's also a reduction in the number and amount of public transportation. And Israel in general has insufficient public transportation, even when it operates at full capacity. So it's been decided between the Minister of Health and the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Transportation, starting this Thursday, to increase the capacity on buses from 25% to 75%. This effectively means every seat on the bus can be filled. You're not allowed to sit near to the driver. There's an area near the driver which has been cordoned off, and no passengers are allowed to sit there, and also no standing room on buses. So that's the way that the bus system is going to work in order to try and cope with this whole opening up and back to school, back to work situation. Trains will be back online again as from June the 8th. Of course, trains can generally be crowded, and there was concern about social distancing. I think we need to accept, and I know you guys are also moving into a new stage of stage 3 lockdown, where things will be relaxed. But I think one of the things that we have to accept as things open up and become a little bit less stringent is that the whole notion of social distancing, even though it might be within our psyche and we might be aware of it and we might be conscious of it, it's absolutely impossible to maintain every minute of every day. And as we open up, we have to just accept that as much as we try to maintain social distancing, it's physically impossible to do all the time. It's just that moment when, as you're getting into a lift, somebody passes you by, or as you're coming in and out of a public toilet, somebody passes you by, or as you walk in the street, somebody passes you by. It's physically impossible to keep social distancing, and we need to kind of come to terms with that somehow.
Yeah, very complicated, and it's one that is, of course, very stressful for us here as we move from one stage to the next. Time is 8:01. Anthony Reich, thank you, as always, for the Israel Report. We'll catch you tomorrow morning.